Please pray with me. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. It's Good Shepherd Sunday, and we love the pastoral images. We love shepherds and sheep. We envision David, the young shepherd, sitting on the hillside playing his flute while calmly watching his sheep. We read Psalm 23 today, and it is likely one of our favorites. If we've memorized anything in the Bible, it may be this psalm. It's familiar, and it reassures us of God's presence. For the children, there is no shortage of sheep coloring pages or sheep songs. And how can you keep from smiling when a young child sings, "I just want to be a sheep"? We love sheep. But today, even though it's Good Shepherd Sunday, we're really dealing with Jesus as the gate. We have one of the famous I am statements from the book of John, "I am the gate." And it's not quite as warm and snuggly as a cute little sheep. According to Webster, a gate is a hinged barrier used to close an opening in a wall, a fence, or a hedge. And barrier doesn't sound like one of our warm and fuzzy church words. We have lots and lots of gates in our lives that separate those on the inside from those on the outside. I put my puppy behind a gate this morning so that she wouldn't chew my slippers. Disney, the self-proclaimed happiest place in the world, has gates. When we travel on subways, buses, planes, trains, we frequently go through turnstiles or gates. There are gates on prisons, in the safety deposit area of a bank, at the entrance to cities like San Francisco and St. Louis. Lazarus begged at the gate of the rich man. There are the pearly gates of heaven and the gates of hell. Our lives are filled with gates. Some of the gates are simple wooden structures. Some are elaborate ironwork. But no matter what a gate looks like, a gate is still a gate. And gates give off various kinds of impressions. I remember touring the British castles and being awestruck at the iron grates that would raise vertically and then be suspended from the gatehouse ceiling. These are gates that can be lowered quickly in times of attack, crashing down to block the entrance, but also impaling the enemy soldier. What a contrast to the image of New Jerusalem in the book of Revelation, describing the heavenly city whose gates will never be shut by day. It can be difficult for us to wrap our minds around what it means for Jesus to be a gate. But whether we have understood it or not, we as a church have been a gate. We have often been a barrier. The history of the church is filled with gatekeeping examples, big, ugly examples. Who is welcome and who is not? Who can take communion and who cannot? Who can be freed from purgatory and who cannot? Who can be ordained and who cannot? Who can go to heaven and who cannot? We have installed gates which limit and control the free flow of God's incredible grace. And in creating these gates, we have to wonder whether we have heard the voice of a stranger or the voice of Jesus. It's important to remember that gates can look different depending on which side of the gate you are on, the inside or the outside. Being on the inside of a church can feel like a loving place, a place of inclusion, a place of protection, and the feeling of being in a family. Viewed from the outside looking in, the church can at times appear exclusive and even hypocritical. And these problems are not new. The blind man in the Gospel of John was thrown out of the city by the Pharisees after saying his sight had been restored by Jesus. Jesus had broken the law by healing on the Sabbath, and that was a gate even Jesus wasn't supposed to crash. Paul wrote letters to the Corinthians, the Galatians, and the Thessalonians. Paul didn't want gates at all, but he wanted to share the good news of Christ with both the Jews and the Gentiles. Luther grappled with gates during the Reformation, which is why the Bible is now translated into the language of the people and why we no longer have the practice of indulgences. Unfortunately, our gates have not gone away. We as a church still put up gates. Most congregations have a welcome statement that says all are welcome. Every congregation that I interviewed with in the call process described themselves as a welcoming congregation. The door to our churches may be open, but are there gates inside? Big obvious gates? Or the subtler yet just as powerful gates? Gates that say you're welcome here, but we don't really need your help. Or you're welcome here as long as you do things our way. Or gates that swing wide open if you're like us. It's worth asking ourselves the question, where are there gates in my personal life, in the wider church, and in our congregations? But it's equally important to ask ourselves where we have seen the gates broken down. The Lutherans and Roman Catholics have been in dialogue for 50 years now, and released a document in 2015 called the Declaration on the Way. And this document identifies 32 significant points that do not divide us, but point us toward greater visible unity on the eve of the Protestant Reformation. And thanks be to God for that. Closer to home, the congregations which support TEAM came together during Holy Week to worship together. The pulpit at Trustville First United Methodist was open to all preachers, and we shared a meal together. No longer Methodists, Baptists, Lutherans, Catholics, and Episcopalians, but Christians coming together during our holiest of weeks. And even closer to home, we welcome Lily and Annabelle to the communion table this morning, reminding them that they are children of God and freeing God's grace to overflow in them, sustaining and nourishing them. Putting up gates is not unique to us as individuals, nor the congregations that we belong to, nor the Christian church. We are human. We put up gates. But I can't believe that Jesus meant for us to build up gates instead of break them down. I don't think that we really understand as a church what Jesus was talking about when he said, "I am the gate." And we are not alone in our misunderstanding. In our text today, the disciples didn't understand what it meant for Jesus to be a gate. Jesus had to explain it to them twice. Theologian Anna Carter Florence takes an interesting view on what it means for Jesus to be a gate. She argues that Jesus is not the one who takes our ticket and lets us through the gate. We don't have to say, "Open sesame." We don't even have to be like all of the other sheep in the sheepfold. That's not what Jesus means when he says, "I am the gate." Instead, Florence describes the gate as a boundary mark between two places. The sheep enter the sheepfold at night, a safe place which provides protection from the wolves and the bandits. The sheep then follow the shepherd out of the sheepfold in the morning in search of green pastures and still waters. If the sheep stayed in the sheepfold, they would starve. If the sheep stayed in the pasture, they might be eaten. They need to move in and out to survive. And it's an ongoing cycle for the sheep, in and out, in and out. And the critical thing for the sheep is to listen to the shepherd and to know when to move. The shepherd guides them, feeds them, keeps them safe, and is always, always with them, over and over, day after day. Jesus is the gate, but not a gate which slams shut. Jesus is a swinging gate. What if the gates in our church were swinging gates? Swinging open for all to come into the church to rest, to be nourished and strengthened, to be in community with each other and to receive the gift of grace and forgiveness. And then swinging open again for us to go out into the world and live the gospel of Christ, to love each other and to live as Jesus has taught us to live. We can't stay in the church all the time because we need to serve in the world. We aren't called to live behind a gate. We can't stay out in the world again either all the time, since we are called to be in Christian community and need to be refilled with Christ for our ministry in the world. What if our pattern of our life was like that of a sheep, in and out? And what if, like the sheep, we listened to the voice of the shepherd and trusted his voice enough to follow him? It's easy for me to stand up here and say that we should be swinging gates, since closed gates are divisive and put a barrier and a limit on God's grace. God's grace is so much bigger than any of us, and Jesus should be the only one who lets the sheep go in and out. But are gates always bad? Of course not. Gates can provide necessary protection for people and for things. But what about church gates? Don't churches, like shepherds, need to worry about bandits and thieves who come only to steal and kill and destroy? Don't churches need to worry about rituals and traditions and history and doing things right? Of course we do. But we really, really, really need to ask ourselves why we are putting up the gate. Are we protecting the flock of the church from the world? Will the gate open wide for the lost sheep? Isn't the bottom line that Jesus alone is the gate, so that in the end there will only be one flock? It's not up to us who passes through the gate, but Jesus. We hear his words, we know his voice, he knows our name. The more we study, read, and worship, and listen in community to his voice, the more we will recognize and can follow that voice. Jesus says, "I am the gate, swinging wide to bring all in for protection, then swinging wide to let all out into the green pastures and the flowing waters." Like the sheep, we follow his voice, so that we may all have life and have it abundantly. Amen.